Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. It's your future. Let Zurich help you protect it. Talk to us today about life and serious illness cover.
Thank you very much indeed for that. Now, we last spoke with Daniel McSweeney in March about his very important role as the Director of Authorised Intervention at Tuam. He's the man appointed by the Minister for Children to direct the excavation at the Tuam Mother and Baby Home, which of course is anxiously awaited by families and survivors groups. He joins us again today with an update on the project. Daniel, you're very welcome, Daniel, to the programme.
Hi, Cormac. Thank you for having me on again.
Now, I want to talk about this as respectfully as possible, of course, given the sensitivity of what we're discussing. You might remind people, first of all, about your role at Tuam.
So I was appointed as director to excavate and forensically excavate and recover human remains from the Tuam site with a view to ultimately their respectful reburial, but also to the extent possible, the identification of those remains, the individualization of remains where they are what's called commingled or mixed together, and establishing the causes and circumstances of death. And in so doing, we have to, of course, respect international forensic standards and best practice and work as closely as we can with families, survivors and persons affected, and equally with the Tuam community, and particularly those residents who live very close to the site.
Now, when we last spoke with you 6 months ago, Daniel, you mentioned several things which needed to be accomplished, you said, before digging could start at the site. You might bring us up to speed as to what they are and what progress is being made.
Okay. I think that the key issue now relates to what we're calling groundworks, which is actually the work that will be done at the Tuam site. So we issued a tender 10 days ago for a consultant engineer who will hopefully be appointed in September, which will then allow us to begin preliminary groundworks at the Tuam site in September and October, which will mean a series of surveys. So a topographical survey, geotechnical survey, utility survey, looking at the boundaries and the structure so that we really understand the context, the situation where we believe the remains are buried. And then based on those preliminary works, the consultant engineer will then design a plan for the sort of civil engineering part that will facilitate us doing the recovery of the remains.
Okay.
And all going well, we will then be in a position to actually start the recovery of the remains and the excavation in February or March of next year, unless in doing the preliminary works we find something unexpected and there's a complication that we don't anticipate. But based on what we know today, and we've done a lot of work to prepare this, we believe that we should be in a position to begin the excavation in, as I said, February or March of next year.
Okay, so all going well, the excavation will begin February, March of 25. The things you mentioned, I think, at the time were enabling groundworks to allow it to begin safely, which you've alluded to there, an experienced site team and an IT system.
Sure.
Just to let people know that the full range, a laboratory premises, and to have sufficient administrative and governance staff ready to respond. How are the other things progressing?
On a lab, we're working closely with the OPW and we've identified a place that we want. We're not quite there yet, but I think we're very close. And in the event that that's not ready in time, we will have a temporary facility for that. Concerning an IT system, we're in discussions with a number of suppliers, and I think, again, we should be ready to have something that will enable us to work when the excavation begins. Concerning forensic staff, we already have some forensic staff and we continue to hire more. And then in the coming weeks, we will go out to hire the specific forensic archaeological expertise we need for the works. And then in terms of our sort of administration and governance staff, we have added additional staff in recent weeks. So I think there we're developing, or we have really developed the capacity to do all of the sort of governance things that we need to do as a new state agency in terms of auditing and returns and reports and all of that. So I think we're on the right track, but each of these is a sort of a parallel work stream and we're trying to land them all so that we will be able to actually do the begin the excavation, as I said, in February or March.
And it's all meticulous preparation, I know. Can I bring you forward then a little bit, if I may, Daniel, to the February-March point? Let's say the excavation starts then. What happens? What's the process when you find remains?
Well, I suppose the first thing is that no works will be done at the site without consultation with residents. I think I need to make that very clear. So even before we start the preliminary works in September, October, we will talk to residents and they will have their opportunity to give their feedback. And I think that's a very important point. But once we start the excavation, then there is a process of really excavating every square metre of the site. And it's an enormous site. It's 1.2 acres. And then in the event that we find human remains, those human remains are very, very meticulously extracted from the site and documented as to where they are and their position in relation to each other. They're then taken to our lab where they are cleaned and then they are documented by our forensic anthropologists who really figure out what we have in terms of the number of individuals represented by, for example, a volume of remains, whether we have remains that are recovered as articulated individuals or whether, as we believe would be the case in the subsurface tanks that have already been looked at where they're commingled. So there's a documentation and inventory of what we have. And then after that, there is a selection of a small number of bones, because we believe we'll be talking about skeletalized remains, that will then, together with FSI, Forensic Science Ireland, be selected. And then Forensic Science Ireland will do a DNA examination of those bones in order to try and extract a DNA profile from those bones, which we will then attempt to match with DNA from families.
Are you collecting DNA samples from families now?
We have collected, or we are collecting DNA samples now from elderly and vulnerable family members. So anybody who, where there is a health concern, we are collecting DNA from them now.
Yeah.
Really, the focus has been on, preparing for the excavation and getting that moving, and we're very happy with that. And then a little bit later in the day, we'll open up the DNA collection to everybody. And that's something that I think will happen a few months down the road.
Yeah, and we're talking about remains here that have been buried between 1925 to the early 60s, I think. So this is a really complex a process that you're undergoing. Can I ask you a very difficult question?
Mm-hmm.
What happens if you find any evidence of deaths from non-natural causes?
Well, if we find evidence of unnatural or violent deaths, then we immediately need to inform the guards and inform the local coroner. Now, I've already discussed this with the guards and the local coroner. And we will sort of have an agreement in place in terms of how we manage this if the event arises. Now, this is something that may or may not happen, but I think it's something that we will, as I said, plan for and really deal with in advance, so that if it does happen, we know what we will do.
Okay. Can I ask you finally? You say you're keeping in touch and keeping the families and survivors and so on informed throughout this process. How are they as all of this continues?
Well, I think they are quite satisfied with, I think, the progress that we're making. Of course, it's very difficult and it's very emotional for people, because we're talking about their relatives. We're talking about a process that they have been pushing for many, many years. I think keeping them informed is very important. Giving them a sense of participation in this, which is what I'm really trying to do, is very, very important. So having that regular contact with groups of survivors, with family groups, with their advocates, is something that I've really tried to put at the center of this work. And I know from my previous experience with the International Committee of the Red Cross on post-conflict missing persons work that having the families at the center is really absolutely vital to the success of a project like this. And this is something that I've really tried to do. And as I said, I think having them informed, giving them opportunities to be consulted, is enormously important, and I think they have been to date quite satisfied with that.
Okay, well,
but of course, there's great impatience for this to move ahead, and I understand that entirely.
That's understandable indeed, yeah. I really appreciate your time, and thank you very much indeed for the update. Daniel McSweeney, Director of Authorised Intervention at UIM.